There's a difference between a chef who ends up on TV and a chef who builds a media brand on purpose. Chris Valdez has spent most of the last decade figuring out exactly where that line is. He's Miami-born and raised, Cuban-American, and food has been in his family business his whole life. He opened his own catering company at 19, going from his first event, $267 in the hole, to a few years later being a finalist on Food Network Star. Since then, he's been on Good Morning America, Live with Kelly and Ryan, Access Hollywood, written a cookbook, and built one of the most recognizable Latin food brands in the country. Today, we talk about building a personal brand in the food and beverage space, what's actually happening with Latin food culture in Miami, and where AI fits in the kitchen. My guest today, Chef Chris Valdez. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Chef, when somebody asks what you actually do these days, what do you tell them?
I don't even know how to describe it anymore because it's like a combination of so many things. You're running a business. You're running what seems to be a detention center with the employees. You're trying to combat market prices and find the best deals while also the chef in you is trying to find the best ingredients and the best quality. So it's like a juggler. You're just trying to juggle so many different things at once. But I guess that's what it takes to get the job done these days. So, and then that's without counting the TV side of things and the cooking and the recipes and the social media. You know, for someone like me, I know I'm young and whatnot, but inside I'm an old man. So every time there's a new platform or a new trick or a new update, I'm like, Jesus, Lord have mercy. Now there's something new to do, you know? So
it's always like that. Even I'm the same boat. Again, not that I'm young, but I'm not old yet. I'll be 40 this year, but I'm the same way. Something new comes out and it's just like, Jesus, I got to figure out how to use this and work this platform because, you know, people's attention is always evolving and changing. And it's the name of the game these days with building your brand. You have to have that presence. What's it been like for you building your brand? I mean, I know it started young, but I mean, I want to dig into all the details of how to build it, different platforms, what you're doing, strategies, all that. So, you know, where does one even start?
I think one thing that the kitchen has taught me is to get comfortable with change. And then something catering has taught me, you know, I've been catering for 16 years. Something that I've learned from there is that get ready for all the plot twists and be willing to adapt and to change. And that means that the recipe you have in mind is sometimes going to change. And I don't mean the actual recipe. I just mean the recipe of life. And I think it's been, my recipe at least, has been something that has been, if you want to be in this business, I quickly understood that you have to be willing to evolve. You have to be willing to learn. If your little, you know, brain can't get it done, then you have to find a team that'll help you evolve. You know, sometimes it's hiring the younger person that understands all of the social media. Sometimes it's hiring a team filled with people that have a mixed understanding of today's market, which is a little bit of old school with new school, with new technology, old technology, AI. So it's just you have to be willing to change, to grow, to evolve, and to, you know, put in some time to learn all of these new things, because otherwise you stay behind. Your business stays behind, your staff stays behind, and people catch up quickly with that. So you have to be willing to change and evolve.
But what do you say to the chef that wants to build their brand? They're trying to build their brand, like who they are, because not everyone can work in fine dining or Michelin to just kind of get that recognition, but they want to build a brand because maybe they have a reputable establishment or they're branching out. What does that look like in the beginning? Because usually you have to do everything on your own because you don't have the resources to create it with the team. So like what's that point? Like how much effort work do you put into it? And then when's the trade-off of actually getting some folks to support you?
So I have two different answers to that. I opened my catering company when I was 19 years old. My first catering event, I was negative $267. So I used all of the profit because, you know, I wanted the Schaefer's and I wanted this and I wanted that. And I also wanted to give a great service So if I could go back in time, I probably wouldn't open a business at the age of 19, just because I didn't know what I was signing myself up for. And, you know, one of the things I love about myself is that I like a good challenge. However, sometimes I don't know when to stop. So, and then to the TV side, I had that dream since I was 10 years old of wanting to do TV. And I had a little background in acting. I went to acting classes for 3 years. So I was debating on how to start with all of that. And there was a moment that I just said, I want to try this. So back then, the Food Network is not what it is today, that you could get Unchopped or there's a million cooking competitions on any network that you could sign up and you could start a following just from that. Back then, it was a little harder. So I think that my mentality was the same one that it is today. If someone won't give me a platform, I'm going to create my own. So what did I do? I hired a local publicist. I started going to all of the networks in Spanish and English. I fed off of my catering company and the contacts I had there. I did pictures, and I got, when I had some money set aside, I put a group of people together and I filmed some videos. I asked myself, what are people looking for? What do people want to see? What do I enjoy watching? Why do I enjoy watching it? And then how could I do that for other people with my style? So I quickly understood you had to build a team. And I also understood that you had to have a passion and a love and a desire for what you were about to do, because, you know, it wasn't easy. I also understood that you had to be willing to get out of your comfort zone. And then most of all, you just have to be willing to have this understanding that you're going to be your number one fan for a while. At first, everyone is going to applaud for you. After you start thinking that you're making it, then the applause will go down, and then you kind of have to suck it up a little and sometimes keep reminding yourself why you started this, what you're going for, and what's going to be on the other side of people not applauding for you or people not supporting you. Because at first, everyone's excited. So my career thankfully started in a high, where I started in Food Network Star, which was Food Network's highest rated show at the time. And, you know, I got all the applause in my community and whatnot. But after that, anything I would do, people were like, you know, and it was just crickets for a while. So you really have to be your number one fan.
Yeah. And you have to love the process. If you only look at the outcomes, it's soul crushing. You know what I mean? If you're just spending there trying to see how many likes, how many followers, the end game, you will sorely disappoint yourself every single day. But if you can fall in love with the process, I think personality, your brand comes out naturally when you are yourself, being authentic. And I know that, I think that's something you've always talked about, is authenticity to yourself, you know, building the brand. How much does play into being who you actually are versus trying to be a character because you're on in front of a screen?
So when I first started my TV career, I have to admit, and this is just, I didn't do this on purpose. I just didn't know any better. I would go on a set and I'd let producers, you know, feed off of what they thought Chris Valdez was. And I would let them feed me lines and I would let them tell me what to do. Then surprise, when you're watching TV and you don't recognize the person you're watching because, you know, the writers, they did this whole different character out of you. You kind of realize how important it is to have your voice and to stick to it. So, you know, that really taught me, afterwards to stick to the story I want to tell and how I want it to be told. So anytime I go inside a room now, I'm like, I go over everything with the producers, directors, and, I'm like, for me, it's very important XYZ, and we're going to stick to XYZ. And then if you'd like, you know, you could, I let you do these little tweaks, but it's very important that we stay true to who I am, because after all, I've invested so much, you know, love and time into this. And then if you just start creating this fantasy version, then, you know, people at home are like, well, who the hell is this guy? So it's just very important that you, when you enter a room, you know exactly what you want to give to others to watch, to cook, to whatever, XYZ. Otherwise, people are just going to do whatever they want with you.
Yeah. What's a skill you had to pick up for TV? I know you said you did some acting, but like once you started getting on TV, what are some of those skills or things that you...
Grit. Grit is one of them. Grit, character. I've had days where I'm having, like, I'll be very specific. I did a national appearance 2 years ago, and I was having the biggest meltdown before and after. 3, 2, 1, smile. You have to learn how to smile. And even though inside you might be dying, you have to learn how to smile. And really just remind yourself all of the work that it took to get to where you are. So, you know, it doesn't mean you're avoiding your feelings. It doesn't mean that you are... casting yourself aside. It just means that right now we're going to remember all of the work it took to get here, and we're going to enjoy this moment for these few little minutes, which on TV, 3 minutes could last a lifetime, what feels like a lifetime. So grit. Grit is one of them. Character, and that nonstop feeling of not giving up. It's hard. You have to knock on a lot of doors. You have to be willing to evolve and change. You have to hear a lot of things you don't want to hear. There's a lot of power pulling behind the scenes. And unfortunately, you're caught up in the intersection of all of that. And sometimes all you want to do is cook and have a good time and get for people to enjoy all of these things. But there's all these speed bumps and road blockages and detour along the way that you have to have the grit to continue with.
Was there, like, when did cooking turn into storytelling for you? Because that's what it's about, is storytelling. Was there a specific moment when you knew that it was just, like, more than just food on a plate? Like, talk to me about that.
I think storytelling started for me, and when I realized that there was something to it, was when I went to Le Cordon Bleu. So just getting there, I had to write an essay of why I wanted to do the scholarship program. And I wrote this essay of how growing up at the age of 10, we lost everything. We lost our restaurant. We lost our two homes. We lost our family. My dad went to jail for 19 years. So it was just like restarting again at life. And I'm flipping through the channels one day. I'm home alone. Mom had 3 jobs, so she was never home. And I see this man and he goes, bam. And right there, I saw these lights. I saw cooking. I saw cameras. I saw people clapping. I saw people like, this is good. I saw all these things. I didn't understand what I was seeing. So I wrote all of that down. Fast forward when I'm 18, I wrote all of that down on a paper and I submitted that as my essay. And I realized the importance of storytelling and what it could do to others and how others could see themselves maybe at a moment where they had that little turnaround moment or that moment where things just started, you know, felt like, this is where I should be going. So I realized that along with using all of the painful lessons I've had to learn in life and the understanding that if someone could use one of my stories to take something from it and learn one thing, anything, then I think you've done a great job as a human being and as a storyteller. So I think it was around the age of 18 and 19 that I learned that powerful tool.
And for anyone listening, the BAM, that's Emeril Lagasse.
Like, that's Chef Emeril, yes.
If you know, because that was this thing. That was the heyday of the cooking shows. That's when, I don't know, to your point, I think the storytelling was so good because it just drew you in. I could watch Food Network all day long. I mean, all day back then. From one show to the next, because I don't know, they just captivated you. They pulled you in. Giada De Laurentiis, even Rachel Ray, like, even though she's not a chef, like that, just the personalities that they had on the show.
Yeah.
But now it feels, I don't know, like attention grabbing. Is that what it is nowadays?
I think I have to be careful with my words here, but I think from conversations with my friends and whatnot, I think that they're trying to evolve to what they think, what people want to see, but people don't want to see that. So I think if they were just, you know, maybe they go to their last Instagram post and they read some of the comments and they use that as feedback, I think they'd understand that people are craving that storytelling. You know, influencers are great, creators are great, and that they have 3 million followers, that's great, but does that translate into good old school TV where you feel good, where you take a story, where you want to recreate this whole meal and, I don't know, get the entire family around the table, sharing stories like we used to back in the day, and just vibing off of one another and just enjoying the little things in life. Is that creator going to be able to create that feeling? I don't think so.
I feel like it is just for clicks, for views. So it's, what can I do to try and trick an algorithm or get people to want to watch it because it's flashy, this or that. And I think there's going to be a renaissance. I think we've already started to see it with food as people are wanting to get back to natural, wholesome, more just clean food. I think it's going to go in the same way, in my opinion anyways, on social media, is folks wanting to see. I know I crave it. I look for, okay, who can I actually watch and want to watch longer than 30 seconds, because it doesn't feel gimmicky. It doesn't feel like a facade. It feels like, I don't know, the people that I grew up with. I don't know. I think that a lot of us are yearning for some of those old things to come back in the food TV space.
I agree. I think it's slowly happening, like very slowly at like a snail pace. But I think it is happening, and I truly believe that certain people keep pushing for it, and I think it'll come to life.
Yeah, why do you think your audience connects so deeply with you?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that I wake up, I am Chris Valdez. I try to be the best version of myself. Anytime I enter any set, it could be when I'm recording my 30-second videos, it could be when I'm recording a brand deal, it could be when I'm on a big set. I just try to give it my best. My best means that I want the best ingredients. I want people to I ask myself, what do I want the viewer to take from this? And I transmit all of that energy into the work that I'm doing. And before I leave the set, I always ask myself, is there anything you want to change? Is there anything you want to add? Is there anything you felt that was missing? So I have a conversation with myself with this, and obviously with my team. And I'm just me. I'm not trying to be anyone else. I'm not trying to be the cool guy. I get these reports of what's trending and what do people, what is social media vibing about? And sometimes, you know, I take a peek at it, and sometimes I'll jump on the little train in small micro dosages, but never have I allowed what society thinks you should be or you should do dictate what my type of storytelling and content is going to be about. I think what I'm trying to say is that one of the best recipes in life is for you to be authentic, to be yourself. And the people that are going to follow you for that, those are your people.
Yeah, for sure. I watched a video of you and you said something kind of profound. I watched little things here and there, and just certain things stuck out. You said that things we run from are actually the things that let us grow. Talk to me about that.
The things we run from are the ones that let us grow. I don't think I wrote that, or I said that specifically about, me. I think, I wrote it through the eyes of someone else. I think, 2 years ago, I went through a breakup, and it really changed the way of how I look at life. I changed so much in my businesses, my friendships, and all. I took an assessment of life, and you know, what do I want in my life? Who do I want there? What am I going to allow? We need to set some more boundaries. We need to be even more clear. We need to do a cleansing around here. And I think I wrote that with that in mind, but I with that person in mind. But I think I also wrote it with just from a backseat, looking at society. I think that so many of us, we know what we need to do, but many of us are afraid to do it. We know what we need to do, but we are afraid to do it, because sometimes the cost that it takes to put in the work, some people are like, well, I don't know if I want to put in all that work. And you know that if you would do all of that work, that on the other side, that that type of feeling or that type of change or that type of result that you're looking for, that you're expecting in life, it's right there. But many of us don't want to put in the work. And I think that that's where we fail in life, that we just, some of us are just comfortable and set in our ways. And it's easier to complain about what I want and what I don't have that's on the other side than to actually put in the work. And putting in the work is hard. Putting in the work is hard. It's sometimes it's therapy, sometimes it's coaches, sometimes it's months of you just reflecting or cooking there in silence, just, you know, wondering what the next ingredient is like. But I really believe that when you do those things, there is something beautiful that comes out of this entire process.
If you just put in the work, I always think about, if I catch myself wanting to potentially doom scroll, we all have our days where we just want to zone out. We just don't want to, you know, whether that be your Netflix binge, whether that be whatever your vice is. And then I have to think to myself, is this getting me any closer to what I actually want to achieve? And the answer is always no. And it's like, if I could just take the time that I'm sitting here, that I'm probably going to spend 30, 45 minutes, and I spend that into watching a video on how to better my interview skills, or how to better my lighting, or whatever it might be, it's going to take me one step closer. But it's just so easy to just fall into the rat race of, hey, I'm going to just do mind numbing stuff and then go back to my daily life. But then to your point, I'm just going to complain that I'm not where I want to be. And why do they get all the fame and glory and it looks so glamorous, even though they don't know and have seen behind the curtain and what it's take to build what you're trying to build?
Yeah, yeah. And also, don't get so stuck up on appearances. Some of the people that we think lived the best lives, when you peek in the back of the curtain and you see some of those things, and I can speak for so many celebrities, normal people, entrepreneurs, it's not all that fascinating. And there's actually a lot of cracks in the foundation. So, you know, we're all going through something and we're all going through different journeys and experiences. And some of us have had to pay certain prices to be where we are. And it's just, you know, it's part of it. But to my point, stay in your lane. Stay in your lane. Focus on applaud those that you want to applaud. But just stay focused on your mission and task at hand. And to something else that you said, I think so many of us do invest times into watching the videos, into absorbing the knowledge, into how could I improve? But many of us fail at the next step. The next step is putting in the action, putting in the work, using this knowledge to do something with it. So I think that that's where people just fail, where they think that just consuming the information is an achievement. No, what are you going to do with that information? You just learned something. What are you going to do? Do something. Get up. Because that's where moving that intention and knowledge into an action, that's when you really see what you did with all of that. But I think that that's where most people fail, you know?
100%. I know that I had analysis paralysis for so long on so many things when I kind of left the corporate world and went out on my own. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I want to do that. Yet I would watch video after video and read book after book. But then when it came time to do it, I was so scared shitless of like, what am I supposed to do versus just doing it? And now that I'm actually like, you know what? Who cares? At the end of the day, nobody really cares as bad as that sounds. I'm just going to work on it. And then you can tweak your methodology and figure out what works and what doesn't work. And slowly it has made me a better videographer. It's made me a better interviewer. It's made me better consultant overall, because it's a tough world that we live in. You know, it's not your 9 to 5 or, you know, in the kitchen. It could be whatever your 10, 12 hour shift is.
I wish it was 9 to 5. It's not 9 to 5.
Right? No. Yeah, between travel and... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm curious, what made you want to leave the corporate world?
Well, it was kind of a double-edged sword. So my position was eliminated and I could have very easily went back to corporate America. I had people reach out, hey, we'd love for you to join. But I felt that something inside of me was missing because I was building for somebody else. I was seeing them reap the benefits of the work that I was putting in and the creativity started to leave. I don't know. There's that gut feeling that people talk about and you really should just follow your gut. And I had done that kind of my whole life. And when this hit, I think it was the universe's way of saying, this is supposed to happen. Now you need to go figure it out. And it's going to be really, really hard for some time before you figure it out. And I'm going on year 3 and it's just now started to turn. But what I'll say is on the flip side is I've had so much more flexibility to be with my kids, to be with my family, when something comes up, it's not a matter of, hey, can I take the day off, or hey, I need to take time off, and getting rejected of like, well, no, we have a big project coming up and we need this done. So in that retrospect, I look back and say, I think it was the right thing to happen to me. Now, I always say as well, you can always get a job. Jobs are out there. They come and they go. People are always looking for somebody. So I don't know. I wanted to be a master of my own destiny versus having somebody else dictate it, what was going to happen to me.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when you live those 9-to-5 lives, you look around and you're like, everyone is just doing like the same thing. It just feels like we're a bunch of robots and just experiencing the same thing. We're all miserable. We clock in. We have our lunch at the same time. We're dealing with the same shit, you know, different story, but kind of like we're frustrated, XYZ. We clock out at 5. We enjoy some little time with our family and whatnot. So I think that's very powerful to want to change that and suddenly understand the value in that, you know, right now, time you're spending with your children is something that later on you're not going to get back because they're going to be older. They're going to want to move on in life. So I think that's beautiful what you did there.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I tell a lot of people, it's not for everybody, you know, these type of lifestyles. And as of late, travel's increased a little bit as more opportunities come up. You usually find that that's where the money is to support is traveling, going places, because there's more opportunities than where you're at. I mean, luckily I am blessed in Chicago. It is a big market. So there's a lot going on in this space, but it's all over the country that they need support. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, just like yours. Again, starting at 19 and your own catering company, that's insane for me to even think about. I was focused on partying in college the first round. The last thing I wanted to do was have a business. I was just making enough money for beer money to go out with my friends, you know.
Yeah, I was just trying to make money for my business and to figure out how to make it grow. And overcoming the obstacles that a 19-year-old would face, which you would think that at that age that many people would applaud you. But I remember so many times I would do a tasting, and there was one specific bride where she's like, "This food is so good," and I got so happy. She's like, "But I could never hire you for my wedding because you're just a 19-year-old, and I can't trust a 19-year-old with my special day." And just like her, I came across so many people. Society will make it sound like we're going to applaud you, but once they have the opportunity to give you a chance, some of them just don't. And that's why I'm so big on giving people a chance and an opportunity. My first client, she taught me what one small opportunity could do for someone, what one small token of belief and the seeds that does to the person. Of how much they could build off of that. So every July 17, we text each other every morning and we're like, thank you, thank you. Until today, she's still our client and I'm always so grateful for her. But one small little, I believe in you, goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a real strategy though when you started? Maybe not, like just getting past the catering thing and getting more into the TV world. Did you have a real strategy to build your brand, or is it, again, just trying to survive and these things just fell into your lap, no pun intended, or kind of you created your own luck?
I don't think I created my own luck. I kind of, again, my mentality was if there's no platform, I will create my own platform. How the hell I understood all of that and how I did what I did, I cannot tell you exactly, but I know it. I created a vision board, which I still have till today, and I mapped out what I wanted the next year to be. And I put in a circle my name, and I put what would this name create or what would this name be? And so I started just drawing all these things and putting all this information. And I went to my assistant at the time, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to start trying to do something new. You're going to think I'm crazy as fuck. All I need you to do is I need you to believe in me. So if I ask you to do something, even if you think I'm crazy, say yes, you turn around and, you know, go tell someone else that I'm crazy, but just at least make me believe like you believe in me. And I remember she's like, no, I believe in you because you can make anything happen. And again, those small tokens of belief that is, I think, is the biggest gift you could give someone. And then from there, I just kept investing into what it is today. And I guess I wake up and I love what I do. And on days that I'm maybe having a down day on set, or maybe I'm not inspired, or maybe I'm about to cut everyone's head, you know, off or something, I remind myself of this powerful message that my assistant put once in a frame for me. And it says, remember why you started. And I remember exactly why I started. And I remind myself every single day why I started. And that's going to carry you through the good days, the bad days, the days that you have to go through so many speed bumps. And it's going to carry you through the days that, I don't know, you look back to that little boy and you're like, hey, we're doing it.
But don't you attribute some of the resilience, the grit, the being you to your childhood? Again, not that we got to go
all of it
into the past, but yeah, like all the hardships and things that you went through to set you up for what you're doing today.
All of it. And if you asked me, what's one of the things I wish I could change is I didn't really have a childhood. But in a way, if things wouldn't play out how they played out, I don't think I would be who I am today. That taught me at a very young age to have that grit, to keep knocking on doors, sometimes to only count on myself. It taught me to be a go-getter. You know, I remember I would go to different businesses. I'm like, hey, if you give me $10 and you give me flyers, I'll pass out flyers in this building. If you give me $20, I'll go to this building, that building, and that building. If you give me $50, I'm going to go to all these 9 buildings. And I would fill out a map that I drew on my own. And I'm like, and there's 500 apartments here. There's an XYZ here. And I would go to each business and then I'd get all the flyers and I'd put them together with a rubber band and I'd put it at the door of people. So I'd make like $300, $400 every 3 weeks that I would pass out flyers. So I don't know. I always had that if something's not coming to me, I will create it my own. I'll go after it myself. And I think I get that from my dad where, you know, my dad came in the Cuban Mariel, 1963 or 68. And he came with just pennies. Every Cuban that came at the same time, they started with the same thing. Dad started as a taxi driver. And then from there, 2-3 years in, he had his own restaurant already. And he put a lot of work into that. So I think I have that same mentality where, you know, we're going to work hard around here and we're going to make shit happen.
Yeah, you talked about the Cubano. Like, let's talk Latin food. Let's talk lighten things up with that space. How's the Latin food evolved into what it is today?
So here in Miami, I think we have one of the reason that it's one of the hottest food scenes right now around the world is because we're into this Latin fusion. So we're incorporating our Miami roots along with the chef's roots, along with this fusion we have going on between Latin and Asian and Latin and Brazilian and with a touch of American. And it's just this big gumbo of culture, of tradition, of flavor, of let's not feed you. Let's give you an experience with the next bite. Let's give you an experience as soon as you open the door of this restaurant and let's transport you to somewhere else. Maybe to even a moment in your childhood where comfort food was something that could fill your heart. So I think that that's what the restaurants in Miami, well, certain restaurants in Miami are understanding is that you have to be willing to evolve like we touched earlier today. But B, people are looking for something more than just food. They're looking for an experience. They want to feel something. Using that little tool of storytelling through food, through your restaurant, through the concept, and making them feel something aside from what they're eating and aside from the experience that they're having.
What's your go-to comfort food in this space?
So this is horrible because every day I crave something different. Yesterday I was really craving some fried shrimp, like jumbo fried pieces of shrimp. And thank God I had been calling it the entire weekend and I was at a concert and there was this little food truck, which I regret not getting the name of the food truck, but they made this crisp big pieces of fried shrimp with some sort of sriracha aioli. And then they put it on a bed of arugula. And then they did something I had never seen before. They cut cantaloupe pieces into it along with some pickled jalapeno and onion and carrot situation. It was just the most amazing thing I had tried. So I was not only happy that I was able to eat what I was craving, but it also really surprised me that the elements and the cantaloupe and the whatnot situation. And then sometimes I'm just craving a nice Cuban steak sandwich where it's a piece of steak like this thin with the crispy but issue string potato sticks with the slices of tomato. I like mayo in my buns, a Cuban bread and toasted, and it's just the most comforting I could eat. And then sometimes I'm craving some black beans with a little bowl of white rice. And that takes me to my childhood when I was, you know, 3, 4. That's what I always wanted to eat, rice and beans. So,
but it's always difficult to get good black beans, I say, because I've gone to many, many places and it just feels like they just pulled them out of a can. There was no love behind the black bean. And so it's so difficult. Sometimes you get tricked. You're just like, ooh, that does sound good. Some black beans and rice. And then you get to that place and you're expecting something. And then you just are sorely mistaken with what is put onto your plate.
Yeah, I've been heartbroken like that before too. But luckily, whenever I'm craving an authentic bowl of black beans, I'll tell mom, can you make some black beans for me? And then she knows I like it nice and slow, no pressure cooker. Unfortunately, in our Cuban culture, we love pressure cookers. I think that really affects the texture and flavor of things. So I like it nice and slow. Just let them cook there for about 2-3 hours, maybe soak them the night before. A little bay leaf in there, a little culantro leaf. The culantro really, really does it. I'm into the sugar secret. You know, you throw some sugar in there, some salt, a little vinegar, some peppers. It's just like you can make it at home. It's so easy to make and cost effective, and it's very rewarding. And usually I make some, and once it cools, I'll freeze some for throughout the month.
Do you have one of these on your YouTube channel? Because I know you do quite a few different recipes and like cooking videos.
I don't, but I'm going to make it for you the next time I film, and then I'm going to tag you in it.
Yes, absolutely.
Jeff, it's just beans.
I love it.
I'm going to put abuelas black beans for Jeff. And yes. Then Jeff, you can make it at home for your family.
Well, because anytime I come down to Florida, and I just signed something to do some stuff down in Florida, it's not in Miami, but just in general, I usually can get my fix of authentic Cuban food, Latin food, because it's just such a strong culture down there, and it's so nice. That is one beautiful thing about when you travel, is really getting to those regionalities. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some really good Latin food in Chicago, but so there's just something about traveling down to some of those regionals where it's a bit closer to home, per se, that you just get that real abuela feeling type food. Yeah. And it's not always at the nice places. It's give me the restaurant that nobody's going to think about, that I can go at any time and I'm going to get that amazing meal. I absolutely love hitting those places.
You know, as soon as you said that, back in the day in Chicago, there was this restaurant that would create all of those experiences for me. It was called Seventh on Heaven.
Yes.
That was my favorite restaurant, and it would transport me to New Orleans. And you'd be on the seventh, and getting up there to the seventh floor, you're like, what? Where am I going? Like, uh-huh. Is there even a restaurant? Why would there be a restaurant on the seventh floor? You would go in there, and it was so unique. It was so different. For a moment, you weren't in Chicago, and the food was just so freaking good. And then you'd right at the entrance, the chef and owner was always there greeting everyone. And it was just authentic, like Creole, New Orleans style food. And it was just one of my favorite spots.
Tell me about how you approach keeping up with the trends. What's going on in food? Are you constantly reviewing that, staying on trend with that, so that way it helps you? Or are you trying to keep things more traditional with, you know, especially with these appearances and the things that you're doing? Or is it a mix of the two?
It's a mix of the two. I am an 80-year-old guy inside, so I'm very traditional. Whenever I land somewhere, I bring out my Google Maps and I put all sorts of restaurants, and I'll spend about 2 hours reading reviews, making a list of what restaurants I want to try based on reviews, based on pictures, based on story, based on what I see on social media. So I really put, like, when you see me at a restaurant, I put in a lot of work before I even got there. My assistant, she is the more trendy one, where she gives me all of the trendy restaurants, trendy videos, trendy ingredients, trendy dishes, trendy people, trendy everything. Things that I'm just like, I don't care. But, you know, my job is to listen to some of those. And then the PR company also helps me with suggesting things that I would have never thought of in my life. But you know, that's where they come in. And, so I think it's collectively, a group effort of things. And that's, I think, how we keep it balanced, you know, we keep it balanced between a little bit of the old school, the new school, and keeping it all at heart with just food at the center of it.
Give me a couple.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. Give me a couple of the hot recipes right now. You talked about, you know, all this, you know, infusion with Latin food, but what are some really hot dishes right now that you can kind of see on the scene?
And again, I just because they're hot doesn't mean I want to do them or try them or eat them. But, and some of them I just don't understand the hype for. I'll give you the perfect example, the dot cake. I don't understand the dot cake. Yes, if I had children, I get it. It's sprinkly, it's beautiful, but it's just a cake with a million sprinkles on top. Like what, you know, and then don't even get me started on the whole debate with Mexico and, you know, the Mexican, like, what? That's our cake. Like, what are you guys doing? So it was very fascinating, that whole little situation that happened there. But the dot cake, I honestly don't understand it, but it goes to show that, you never know what food can cause and create in people. And, you know, I think it's a matter of not fighting it, just going along with it. And hey, I guess they like it. So let's give them what they want. There's so many celebrity chefs that they say, I fed XYZ, a former president, the queen, whatnot. What they did like, they liked the potatoes that I got from McDonald's and I reheated them and I fried them in beef oil and I reserved them to them. And, you know, and I'm using a very specific chef story there. You know, people like what they like. So we just give them what they want. But to answer your question, tacos are always a thing, you know, when they do it with the quesadilla or when they do it with in a smash burger style or the burger and taco combination situation. So that one's always something that's trendy. Definitely, people like different types of drinks. So I've been seeing like this sort of piña colada bubble tea situation happening. And then a burger. The burger is always they're between the smash burger and the stuffing of the burger, and you don't need a grill to cook your burger, you know, do it inside the oven. So yeah, it's just so many little things that just people think of.
I want to switch a little bit to the future tech. I think you'd mentioned AI earlier on. You know, what are some tools of tech that are changing the game from your perspective? Because I like to hear other chefs and what they're seeing, what they think is working, and where it's just too much.
So I think definitely something that before AI even entered the game, something that has really been, I wouldn't say altering everything, but just the internet itself. I think that with social media being such a tool where everyone shares their work, sometimes people will see that work and they'll either get inspiration from it, but they'll also be like, okay, so how can I make this into my version? How can I change this up? So definitely social media has played a big role. Now. And some people have just, this is so much. Everyone's doing, for example, the dog cake. Everyone was doing the same damn dog cake. So it becomes a thing where you have to ask yourself, do I want to follow a trend or do I want to stay true to my roots? But definitely I see how people use social media, and maybe they think they're not using social media, but it does dictate their decision process. So in a way, it does affect. So that's why sometimes I don't like to even see anything food related, because otherwise it just, you know, messes around with my brain. I'd rather go into my cookbook collection, bringing out some books, looking at some recipes, and then letting my mind wander from there versus being fed something through a screen. And then I guess if you look at AI, and you know, it's done some great things, but when you call a restaurant and everything is digital, like I kind of think that already kind of ruins the dining experience for me, because I think one of the most beautiful things you could do is someone picking up the phone, hey, how's your day going? And just greeting you the old fashioned way. I think that's so beautiful. So unfortunately, a lot of us are, you know, I get it. maybe saving some money. But it's really just, you're already setting up an experience from the telephone, and now it's not even a person. So I don't know how I feel about that. So definitely, I think that certain things should just stay the good old-fashioned way, because, you know, that's just the beauty of it.
Do you think that goes with AI-generated recipes, you know, AI chefs, or do you see it as an actual tool that could help versus, let's say you have, you know, the flavor Bible, and you potentially upload that into an AI system, and it can then kind of thumb through all that? Or do you think there's more value in actually having to go through that book and pair up flavors, profiles? What are your general thoughts on that?
Okay, so I think it is a great tool to use when used correctly. Don't let AI be like society, where it's going to dictate all of it. Everything you should say and do and whatnot. My AI knows my flavor preference, my go-to ingredients. It also has collected all of the information from 11 years of putting things into the internet with media appearances and whatnot. So definitely sometimes I'm like, hey, so if Chris Valdez were making a burger, what type of burger would he make? And it's summer and, you know, he wants to add some pineapple in there. Sometimes it gives you some great ideas. And then I think your job as a human being is to filter those ideas and then add some creativity into it. Like, yeah, how do I feel about that? And would I add some of this? So don't let it just feed you and do exactly what it says there. Have a conversation, you know, let it marinate. Have some sort of a reaction to it. Be like, oh, do I really like this? Do I not like this? Well, what if I mess around with this and I add some of this and whatnot? So I think it's a great tool if you are filtering it through your humanized thoughts and mind and experiences and whatnot. However, if you're just letting the robot take over your entire system by just telling you what to do, say, cook, then I think that that's where it's kind of like a cheap, you know, just excuse to not doing something yourself.
Is there a tool you wish existed for anything that you do that doesn't exist?
Yeah. Let's go back to when I was 10. Chef Emmer would say it all the time, smell-o-vision. Sometimes I'm watching, food videos on a screen, and I wish I could smell it. Like, it's just where you're like, man, that looks so good. Like, I really would like to smell that. So smell-o-vision. I don't think it'll ever, obviously be created, but I that would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
I think we've all been saying that for a long time.
Like, imagine, as a child, I would walk into my family restaurant all the time. And I could just close my eyes and think about all of the smells that I would smell around the kitchen. And that those type of smells took me to the curiosity of asking my mom, what are you cooking? Why does it smell like this? And what are you adding in there? And her letting me taste all of these things. Imagine if you could lock in those smells. And whenever you want to transport yourself back to that feeling of being a six-year-old where life was just easier and you just had to worry about what I wanted to eat and do at school and whatnot, and imagine you could just press a button and smell it and go back to that time. I think that would be so beautiful. I mean, one can only dream, right?
Oh, that would be magical. And I never say never. I mean, we're trying to put people on Mars, for God's sake. So you never know what could happen. 5 years out, is food media getting more human, or is it going to go more synthetic?
Anything related to food and TV is something that's always evolving and changing. I think that if you're smart, you evolve and you change with these things. Media also understands that if they don't change with it, that they're going to stay behind. So I think that since they understand that, it's constantly changing. And also our society is changing. The way we consume information is changing. And that's why media has understood that if they don't do that, there's going to be other people that are going to do that. Like nowadays, you don't need to be on CNN to be a reporter. You could just have a phone, have your point of view, and you could report your things, and millions of people will tune into that. So if you don't get with the times are going to leave you back there. So I think definitely we're going to see a lot more change, and there is a lot of change happening right now in the media platforms. And then obviously food is always changing. 3D flavored paper that you go inside a restaurant and that's what you're eating. And, you know, I haven't tried that yet, but and I don't, as of now, I don't want to try it. I think if I'm passing by, I wouldn't mind a little sample, but I just don't care for it. There's just some things that you have to set a little line, and I'm not going to try that, or I don't want to be part of that and whatnot. And luckily, I've been able to do that throughout the years that I've been here, where I want to preserve food as I learned it, food as I consumed it, where we cooked, where we put in hours of work, where we put hours of thought, where we wrote down our recipes and we would save it for our next family member, where we would put it just in a big pot in the middle of the table and we would pass out our plates and we would help each other serve and consume it together. For me, at least, that's, I think, the beauty and the magic in it all.
I don't think that will ever leave food at its core, because I think that's what it is about, is the energy, the essence of what you put into it. I mean, just example, yesterday is Father's Day, and normally we go over to my father-in-law's house and he kind of puts on a big spread, but he's had some things going on with his parents. And I said, you know what? Let me host. Let me take control. Let me take the burden off of you having to worry about what's going on. And I spent all day.
What'd you make?
So I very simple. I think that's what it comes to. I just did some baby back ribs, some smoked chicken. I have a smoker. Smoked chicken, corn on the cob, a nice chopped salad, some watermelon with feta. So it was very basic and very simple, but like I really poured. Like I don't get to spend many days doing things like smoking. I mean, it was 6 hours out at the grill, making sure that they're where I want them to be and they have the right amount of smoke and the right amount of tenderness. And you could, it's that feeling that you get as a chef. I think that's, at least for me, that's what's always kind of propelled me to like want to cook food, was that feeling when you see people eat it. It's just to stop and literally just watch their face and to hear the, not even the, oh my gosh, it's the, the, oh my gosh, that are under the breath that you hear and you go, I did it. That's what we needed today to make the day successful. And then everyone to just be appreciative and be able to just be around the table and have that meal together. It's those type of memories that you don't forget. And yes, was it a lot of work? Yes, it was a lot of work on, you know, Father's Day. And it's like, you should take the day off. And it's like, there's plenty of days to take time off. But when we can get together and I can really support, you know, my family, you know, I want to be able to do that. So it was a good day. I'll leave it at that.
What did your father-in-law say?
He was so appreciative of the fact that he didn't have to do one thing. He didn't have to lift one finger. He came in, was able to play with the grandkids, hang out with them the entire time. Hey, food's ready. I had it all spread out. He was able to have it, and you could tell on his face. It wasn't a false like, oh, thank you so much. It was this means a lot. And this little one gift gesture went further than I think you know. And that really resonated. And then I even got a text later on about, thank you so much again. This was so nice and everything was wonderful. And that's what it was. That's what it is for me, you know?
And something tells me that 20 years from now, you're going to remember that exact moment. And it's something that you're probably will pass down to your children. And one day they're going to tell you that, hey, let me take care of it. And you're going to remember this moment. So I think that's the beauty in food and all of this, that it just comes along with these stories that are tokens of love, appreciation, tokens of memories that we'll take with us to tomorrow. Because, you know, fortunately we can't travel back in time, but we have memories that that make us remember and, you know, sometimes just smile and be like, wow, I remember that day and it meant so much to me.
Chef, what do you want this next chapter as a storyteller to be?
So I think this, you know, doing this for 11 years, I think I've consumed so much information. I have a beautiful following. I know the stories that mean the most to me. I know about my community, the importance of me sharing their stories as well, and our culture and our savoir and our story. So this next chapter, what I want it to look like is a celebration of all of that, along with who I am as a person, someone that admires food, someone that admires storytelling, and someone that admires putting our heritage and our flavors for everyone to consume and to share it with everyone, because I think that the best things in life are just shared.
It's beautiful. Where's everyone go if they want to find out what you're doing? You're all over the place. So hit them up with the best places.
Just Google Chef Chris Valdez and everything will come out there. The Instagram, the YouTube. Whatever platform you use, but definitely, I think food is just the most beautiful thing we could all share. And that's why it means so much to me, because it's just that one thing we all have in common. So, whether you're watching a YouTube video from 11 years ago that I did, which I'd see that little boy and I ask myself, like, how did I know to do all of those things? But something in there, I'm sure, will make you laugh or at least want to make you cook and share with someone. So,
yeah, after watching some of them, they are you as your personality shines through. They are really fun to watch. They're the right amount of length. I really enjoyed going through your YouTube page and seeing some of the videos and the levity you bring to it. It's not all serious and you got to do this. This is who I am, and I take it or leave it. And clearly the world has taken what you've had to offer. So, Chef, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We'll throw everything into the show notes so you can find it easily. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Thank you, Jeff.